Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
the moon, a history of the future by Oliver Morton, I think it is the very famous economist editor and very great wordsmith. And I must admit, when I've read it, and what I'm going to do is do a podcast review, a combination of review of the book and interesting facts, some that he put in and some which he should have in. And I'm going to do a review of it. And as I do it, I'm sort of sitting back and saying, oh, gee whiz, the last couple of podcasts I've done are really poor quality. And the problem is that as I would need to do a podcast, the ideas are still fluid. And one of the things I realise now, that as I do a book, I should have notes, a notepad to do it. Here, I'm just waiting here, hopefully doing a podcast while driving up to Springwood, the nearest suburb here, and so I just had to stop there for people crossing it. Yeah, so one of the things I realised I should do is I should have a notebook in which I write down the critical aspects, the things that are missing through it. And as I realised that you've got these wordsmiths who can really, you know, make something like the moon come alive, but they don't have the academic rigour behind them to ensure that every last aspect is researched through. And so they need the sort of researchers. You don't have to be an academic researcher. You have to be sort of researcher like IQ, where you actually read into the facts and travel it down. So we're doing the moon. Now, the first couple of major things that we want to say about the moon is so Oliver Morton gave a good introduction to the moon, and he started off in this classic way that I happen to be sort of a multiple stranded introduction. I'm traveling to someone to ask them about the moon, and I look up and I see the moon and I think about the moon, and then from that he described various aspects of the moon. Now I suppose the thing that so he sort of managed to get some sort of physical things about the moon up first, then the moon landing, and then you can see beautiful the way he edited things, the moon landing, the Apollo missions. It was beautiful and obviously wildly read. And so for some reason moon science fiction was much higher up, got a bigger Guernsey than traditional moon culture, and sort of didn't make it. Some of the points were sort of buried in there if you really understood it. I suppose the first things I want to say is about the features of the moon as we see it at the moment. He did a really good idea that if the moon is more than half, so this is a description of the a basic description of the moon, which is a great thing, and he described it, summarised it, described it, summarised it in a way that's really taught, and I thought that's fantastic. So we've got four points that you can describe the moon. You can have a full moon, obviously, absolutely full round circle. Then after that, it's a gibbous moon. So a gibbous moon is not full circle, had a little bit of chunk in outer, and then once it goes past halfway, it goes from gibbous to crescent moon, which sort of makes sense, and then a new moon, and you can then for all the moons, there's a different name for the moon on every month, a northern hemisphere way, a wolf moon, and all this type of stuff. Then you can have the whether the moon occurs more than twice in a month. And that's called a new moon. There's something which is known and that is a black moon. That is when you have two new moons in a month. So two full moons in a month is a blue moon. Now, this pulls up one major point, is that the difference between a lunar calendar and a solar calendar, and the word month. And this is something he missed. And you've got all this thing about, does he miss this because it's not there, or has he not got the context there, or do you have it there? The word month means from a month, which is an interesting aspect of it there. Just on that historical stuff, you've got Monday, Moonday, and then Freitag is also related to the moon. I really didn't know that. So Freya is a Norse female moon goddess who's actually got pulled across on a chariot of cats. Now, this is new information, all buried in there. So you've got Monday, the moon, and then you've got this calendar aspect of it. Now, one of the interesting aspects of it is the moon as a driver of science, and this is actually really missed. And this is before we knew what the moon was. The moon is a celestial heavenly sign by God. You know, it's up there, that's God watching you. And the interesting thing is that the moon does not rotate, it keeps the same face at you. So it does look like a big post. You know, you normally think that things, if it spun, everyone would say it's a circle, I can tell it instantly. Because it doesn't spin, it could well be just a circle painted up like the Truman Show or something like that. That up there. So that's interesting there, but this point that he did perhaps miss out, this is Oliver Morton miss out, and that is that what used to happen is that they had, in terms of calendars, they'd have, in order to get things done, they'd have a fighting month and then a peaceful month. Now, if you legitimately did your calculations and came up with a different starting day, if you came up with an earlier starting day, legitimately, you could still clobber your enemy. The enemy just can't really complain. I did the moon a different way. I calculated it a different way. They'd be all dead. So Muhammad said, look, you got to pray, I think it's five times a day. But what's happened is in some cultures they've collapsed two of those fives, they've doubled up, so it's three times a day in some cultures. But also the month is strictly a lunar month, and it's a lunar month determined by when you can first see the crescent moon. And of course, when you can first see the crescent moon became all important for people to start calculating. And in essence, because Muhammad set upon a physical phenomena to regulate human life, people then needed to get one up on what the physical phenomena was, and this really catapulted Islamic interest in this area. So this is a small important aspect which I don't think coming across. So the moon is a gigantic symbol. It's the symbol of the Muslims because they've looked there, and it's in flags and stuff like that. Now, we'll go back to, I suppose it's worthwhile saying there's a few cultures he missed out. Now, there are certain segments of the Australian Aboriginal culture which refuse to look at the moon. Now, that is very much different. Isn't that different? Refuse to look at the moon. Various military operations in the past have required moonlight for them to carry out. And it's meant that nocturnal animals, in general, you can have sort of animals which operate on reduced light. I think it's diurnal animals. It's animals which operate in the dusk and stuff like that. The moon can really, really change it there. So, in terms of cultures, the major culture I think driven up is, and it's sort of related to the features on the moon. So in Oliver Morton's book, there was two aspects of it. Just to talk about the grubby marks on the moon, which are the volcanic basins, the volcanic lava plains, which are predominantly on our side of the moon. So the moon looks completely different on each side. So the other side looks as though it's sort of like the moon of science fiction, whereas the moon on our side is a very domestic moon with the marks on it. And he says about this particular legend where the moon sort of raped a sister, and the sister couldn't tell what was happening, so she put marks on the face so you'd tell who was the naughty boy. And in this case, what they did was, just having a look at the time here, 28, is that right? Sorry, I've got an appointment coming up, Valley Heights. Cars coming up. Got to go. Corner. Just looking up here. I'm just going to have to change lanes here. Okay, so so that's the explanation of marks on the moon. Now, the marks on the moon have been universally the most common recognition of marks on the moon has been. Oh, can you just calm down? Calm the farm, man. Look at this. Sorry, I'm in traffic, and this car's just been upset that I'm not driving up the bum of the next person, and so he's zipped out, and only to be, you know, really massively accelerated to tailgate the next person. Good on you, mate. The universal interpretation of marks on the moon has been a rabbit, and that's why the Chinese associate the moon with a rabbit. Something that he did miss out, which is so important and central, and this is the Saxon worship of the moon and the belief that the moon had a rabbit in it, and the origin of Easter, which is a moon festival set by a new moon. It's a pretty interesting thing. Easter is a moon festival, and it's a festival of spring and renewal, and of rabbits and of eggs, and the moon, a circular egg and stuff like that, is very much this very story. Come across here. Not taking too many risks. How are we going for time? So this really bright, beautiful Australian day with heaps of intense light. Yeah, so the Saxons had an Easter tradition, and one of the things we've got this idea of the poor church, doing well. I'm going to have to stop now. Okay, back again after a short sejourn at the Valley Heights hardware store. I was getting some resin to pot circuits in, and some flocculant, because we're getting our pool ready. And we're talking about the moon. There's only a few minutes to go. The Saxon worship of various things. They had the pillar in the center of the world, and the tree of knowledge, and this famous saint, British saint, came and chopped it down. And so when you actually look at it, you see far from the people. I just want to work out how I'm going to do this trip here. So I'm just going to concentrate for a little moment looking at the traffic, because it might be, oh, curses. I'm just not going to do a right hand turn, so we're going to have a little bit of a sojourn here. Whoa, here we go. Certainly a sort of pretty aggressive around here now. No U-turn there. Where does that take us? Mr. No Risk Driving. Well, I'm still driving. I haven't had an accident in, 30 years more of driving. But it's meant that I've been sometimes late to things because I've taken a cautious route. Now, this reminds me, if I'm going to get around here, the thing is it's the lack of understanding of how. I'm just going to have a check if I can do this. I'm going to have a look. Where is this going to be? Okay, so I'm just trying to take a very cautious route here. Whoops. This is all in the name of a single U-turn to get in up to Springwood. Thing that you become intensely aware of reading history is that the early Roman Christians were the absolute aggressors, and part of the aggression was appropriating lunar feasts. So Christmas, Passover is a lunar feast, but also the actual Easter and Easter eggs and Easter bunny are associated. The Easter bunny is associated with the moon and the Saxons. The poor Saxons suffered massive extermination and actual cultural genocide. And it was sort of a bit of a stalemate where the pagans were fighting the Christians early on. It's insane to understand how aggressive the early Christians were. They weren't just suffering as the butt end of Viking jokes. And the poor Saxons, the Anglo-Saxons, they didn't do too well overall. They took a bit of Britain, and then they got invaded by the Normans, by other people like that. But they did have this pillar of wealth. It's hard to say that they were living off the remnants of the Roman Empire, and they would have large hoards of treasure and I think pillar of the tree, the center of the world, and all this type of stuff. And the Christians all got into them. But the interesting thing is that the missionary work really worked up in England, and then the English came down. It's sort of amazing how the English had this influence coming down there, sort of Christian, a more modern Christian outlook to look after people. And now I'm just checking what the time is. 46. Beautiful. Be able to get to this appointment of my own making at 2 o'clock. So let's go up then. So this is something that I'm a bit sensitive to. So Oliver Morton dismissing other cultures, and of course the biggest culture is to talk about is the Easter Island, because the people in Easter Island thought there was no other, they lost memory of all where they came from completely, and believed that their island was the only place, and the closest place was the moon. They worshipped the moon because that was the only other place they could see, because they were way out in the ocean as far as they could see. And I believe that they were a nation unto itself. And so in that respect, the moon is a really interesting aspect. So the Aboriginals, Easter Island, the Saxons, all coming in. It's sort of very interesting to do with it. And I think this is a bit of a weakness of Oliver Morton. However, he's it's just on the tip of my tongue, some really interesting facts that or moon related things. Now, the one of the things it not clearly described is that the dividing the universe in between the lunar thing as proximate and further away. Anything between the moon and Earth were in the earthly sphere. I'll just have a look at this. Anything between the moon and Earth were in the earthly sphere, and anything beyond that was in the heavenly sphere. The idea that things in the heavens behave differently, they went in long arcs, circular arcs, where things on Earth, well, they didn't travel in straight lines, they went on parabolas and stopped, they suffered frictions. And in a sense, their observation was correct. Things travel in space as if there is no friction, no wind slowing it down. Now, the so this is the idea that the moon had no features on it whatsoever was a thing of Renaissance arts. And this is where I think Oliver Morton did rather well, is the idea that Copernicanism and Kepler, that area, and Galileo, features on the moon, their idea that it was another world is important. That's what I found rather interesting is the way that Tycho came up with a hybrid system which explained let's have a quick look around here. Well, yes, we'll be able to do it. That is the moon went around the Earth, everything went around the Earth, including the sun, and it but the Mercury and Venus were moons of the sun, sort of a hybrid, almost there, enough to actually neutralize the next thought. And it's interesting to see while it's going through. Now, I'm just going to stop this at the moment because I'm now having to go off and go off onto this appointment. Thanks for listening. Okay, back podcasting on the moon by History of the Future by David Morton. I don't think it's not a very satisfying future that he discusses with respect to the moon. Just going on that, I'll go back and discuss about the poor old Saxons and the ancient cultures which worshipped the moon was part of it. But in terms of the future of the moon, as he sort of built up the case for the future of the moon, it sort of began to unravel a bit in that the idea that the moon is just unweathered debris of it's not really technically unweathered. The actual thing that happens with the moon is that a meteorite comes in, rubble gets resent around, or trashes the moon. A meteorite trashes the moon, but then that rubble slowly smooths out as very small micrometeors eat away, a bit like melting ice cream. I think the moon is made out of ice cream, if you'd like to say it. So although you get these big massive impacts which are basically thermonuclear explosions, there's lots of nanometeors, things which are less than a millimeter across. They come in, slam in, and they just vaporize and melt the surface of the moon and soften it. But what the point is he's saying is that the moon never changes. Nothing ever happens on the moon. And that, in a sense, the moon is sort of timeless. So it's not really, I suppose, the history of the future. And as he goes through it, the arguments for a moon base become more and more tenuous. That is, exploitation of the moon, it's actually better to exploit asteroids. It takes probably a few more days, a bit more tricky to get to them, but then they're easier to mine and easier to look at. And as a launching pad, it's actually probably better to go somewhere else. Now, we went to poor old Saxons. I think if you were a Saxon and you read a description of IS, sort of a extreme religion which demanded total obedience and organized things and had people who as slaves and all that type of stuff, you would say a Saxon, ancient Saxon, if they read a description of IS, would say, well, that's what the Christians are like. And they totally exterminated the culture, and well, what's more is they appropriated, or which is, I suppose, culture jam. You have a cultural ceremony so similar to what you have that people say, oh, you sort of drown it out with noise. And so you've got the Easter ceremony, an Easter moon ceremony. There is a little tidbit which goes in there, is that Gabriel, the Archangel Gabriel, is from the moon brand of angels. So there's apparently a cadre of angels associated with the moon, and Gabriel is associated with it. I haven't seen it. I wouldn't be able to verify that. I think this is sort of pretty weird. It hasn't actually... it's evolved probably in the early Middle Ages, Middle Ages. You've got St. Thomas Aquinas and the choirs and the ranks of angels. However, it is an interesting point made by Oliver Morton that the moon is thought to make maidens get pregnant. And of course, this seems the obvious thing. Oh, how did you get pregnant? We've got all these taboos. How did it happen? The moon did it. And so there's this idea of keeping out of the moon, this thing that came through it. So it is interesting that at least he's made that connection. This is the beauty of someone with Oliver Morton. Now, the facts are a bit tenuous, but given low quality is a space in which you can make interesting connections which wouldn't stand together, and in a sense that it's these low quality twilight connections, probably a moonshine, that you get them. Now, I've got a limited amount of time. The thing that most struck me is the awe significance, the picture of the Earth from the Moon. So we've got the picture of the Moon from the Earth, the picture of the Earth from the Moon by the Apollo 8 moon rise. Now, it's really interesting how it was done in terms of that. There's the Copernican picture of the moon, which led us to travel up to the moon, and this is a famous picture. So Apollo 8, there was a fuck up in America and they couldn't get the lander ready in time, so they just, all they did is they sent the capsule off to the moon and then did a slingshot around and came back. Now, it just so happened that this is the exact maneuver required in the Apollo 13 one. So it's just, and they had the Jim Lovell in there, and so they took a photograph of moon of the Earth rising, and it is interesting that the Earth rise was different. Well, it wasn't actually technically rising, it was different from what has been conceived earlier. So this is really interesting because our conception of the Earth was as a as a classroom globe of the Earth, not this as a full blown planet, much like the others. But now there's life down in them. So that's the incredible thing. Now, what they did to this one is that they rotated the photograph. By the time it went to Time magazine, so it looked like an Earth, it looked like a moon rising and falling. Earth rise, and this is something that I think Oliver Morton sort of just let across. So as the moon shows us the same face towards us, we don't see the far side of the moon doesn't rotate to us at all, ever. So I wonder if that's, it'd be interesting if the moon was rotating at a meter per second or something, some incredibly small amount over millions of years it's doing, but it has stopped completely. And I find that absolutely incredible thing to contemplate. But the interesting thing is that as the moon is stationary, from space, the sun is moving, but the Earth isn't. This is one of the things, as far as the moon is concerned, the moon is in an Earth synchronous, the Earth is in a geosynchronous orbit for the moon. How about that? So the moon is always at the same point in space. So the Earth is always at the same point in space. And in that sense, the Earth doesn't rise on the moon. It looks like Earth rise, but this very important statement is missing. They just didn't pull it out and say anything. So it's quite an amazing thing to come out and describe it. So this is very interesting for me in terms of there's this idea of a Aristotelian view of space and a Copernican view of the moon with all these features, there's not the feeling that have we progressed? I don't know what the story is. It's where you can only imagine yourself with changed conditions. So the same operating system in your head, that is, there's sunset, sunrises, moon sets, moon rises, and the inability for people to actually take that next step. And so which is sort of this, I think, is really the future of the place. Elon Musk. And look, if it pulls off, Elon Musk can get 100 people up to space in his big Falcon rocket. I will be amazed. But look, practically for 7 billion people, the idea of putting them to a high pressure, Mars, look, it might just happen. My overall thing is that there's a thinking of transporting what I have on Earth to a distant place. So I'm going to go to, so one of the things pointed out about the moon is that life couldn't happen in the moon. It is unclear whether a fetus could develop inside a woman's body on the moon, whether you could birth, and whether that fetus would grow. There was a point, and this is where science fiction can go. So science fiction is beginning to, science fiction is all, as far as I can see, about using keeping our situation the same, but twiddling all the parameters on the outside to get a different lighting. So at its essence, the same social systems, the same thinking is here. We've got the Earth, we've just got a different lighting system for it going through. If you read through it, it's just that he's sort of, Oliver Morton has sort of dismissed the other cultures, Easter Island, the Aboriginal, the Saxon, just to name the Chinese, for instance, cultures, the moon, and sort of passed them off and then brought up into a picture the science fiction culture. And what I would say is the science fiction culture of the of Earth is really a reimagining society as it is. And this is the interesting thing, that a lot of the H.G. Wells science fiction is not in the future. Well, it is artificially in the future, but it's this, the science fiction comes as perturbations, how you react, how would you problem solve if this happened. The interest there is really one degree. One degree separation from our current predicament. So the idea is that if you go up to Mars, what do you want to do in Mars? Well, I want to recreate as much of what is it like on Earth. And this is very true, say, for the British colonisation of Australia. Initially, what did we want to do? We wanted to cut down all the trees and build English-style villages and have English-style things. It's only after a long while did we actually evolve a new sort of culture. And it would be interesting that over many, many generations of people on Mars never coming back, that it would be seen that in Martian conditions, a Martian would be more evolved. It's sort of like the idea of the Australian bushman, someone who's been at the bush for several generations, sort of knows the water, the harshness, the temperature, the light, and all this type of stuff. There, they can sort of consider themselves a bit bigger. But what has happened is that the actual we're still transporting our society and cut and pasting it into space. And one of the things is that human life is not going to be... Human life on Earth is one thing. Human life on another planet will be completely different. We'll be able to compare notes, but the idea of it being the same is... There's not. There's sort of like you got a basic cake recipe, and you make up a some various types of cake. Now, look, so someone has actually come to visit, which is rather good. Good there. So this is going to be the end of this podcast, and I've hoped to. And look, I really haven't actually got into the interesting facts, the actual physical facts of the moon. This is a sort of cultural tour of the moon, which Morton has done, and it's interesting that he's done it without diagrams, and this is a truly great feat. There's something to be appreciated. Now, oh, this is someone who's left their window down. Oops, he's okay. I think he's the the security guard. Okay. Thanks a lot. This is we've got a school next to us, and so during the holidays they have security guards which just sit outside the school. Thanks a lot for listening, and hope this is a bit better podcast. Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.